Good morning, Boker Tov, and welcome back to Parsha Perspectives for today, our weekly analysis of the Torah portion. If you like learning one Parsha a week, you're going to love this week because we've got a double Parsha, a double feature for you, Vayakel and Pekudei. I want to thank, as always, our generous Parsha Perspective sponsors for the year, the series, dear friends Becky and Avi Katz and family, in loving memory of Becky's father, David Grossman, Le'ilui Nishmas, David Ben Menachem Manish. Thank you for your generosity, and thank you for your friendship. This morning's shiur is also sponsored by Sharon Wenger and Jonathan Wenger, in loving memory of the dear husband and father, Bruce Wenger, Dov Ari Ben Yisrael, on his fifth Yuritzeit. His neshama should have an aliyah. A reminder, if you'd like to sponsor an episode, if you'd like to sponsor a shiur, please email lee@brsonline.org, lee@brsonline.org. Also, a reminder, we are now off of Zoom and any other platform. We're streaming only on YouTube Live. To get notification every time we go live, an opportunity to learn together, simply press the subscribe button. All you have to do is hit subscribe, and you will be notified in real time every time we go live. Parshat Vayakel, page 516, the Art Scroll Stone, Chumash. And of course, the great question of Vayakel Pekudei bothering everyone each and every year. The question that jumps out when we read Vayakel Pekudei, it sounds awfully familiar. And it's familiar not because of something that we read weeks or months or years ago, but it's familiar from a couple of weeks ago, because Vayakel Pekudei seemed to be almost exactly a repetition of Truma Tetzava, leaving the reader wondering, why do we need to be told again? Does Hashem think we have such a short memory, such a short attention span, that we can't remember what we were reading? Why are Vayakel and Pekudei repeated all over again? The truth is, the answer is found in the opening words, not only of Vayakel, but of Pekudei. Eila Pekudei HaMishkan. These are the accountings of the Mishkan. The Medrash tells us that the word Eila, the word these, is an atonement, it is a kapara, it is a repair from having said with the Egel Azav when it came to the mistake, the horrific judgment of the Egel Azav, the golden calf. We said, Eila Elohecha Yisrael, this is the God of the Jewish people. The Eila Pekudei HaMishkan came in order to offset, in order to repair the damage that was done from Eila Elohecha Yisrael. So Vayakel Pekudei follow the Cheta Egel. Because first we were told Shumu Tetzaveh. God told us, here's, if you want me to live among you, you want to feel my presence, you want to connect intensely to me, here is the prescription, here is the formula, here is the way to do it. But we thought we could outsmart God. And we said, God, those are nice suggestions, but we know better than you what we need. We know exactly what will make us feel connected. And so we tried to get creative. We tried to have some entrepreneurial spirit. We tried to invent our own way to connect to Him. But that doesn't work. Hashem, the divine, the omnipotent, the infinite, the creator of the universe, He built us, He programmed us, He built our hardware and our software. He knows what makes us tick, He understands our psyche, and He designed exactly the formula to connect to Him, to live our best lives, and to get the most out of this world. And therefore, after the Cheta Ego, where we thought we could do it for ourselves, we weren't in fact, according to the Kuzari, we spoke about this, we weren't in fact ignoring God. We weren't being disloyal or betraying God. We just thought we had a better way of connecting to Him than He told us Himself. So if you'll notice, there's a major difference. The Beis HaLevi points out, the Beis HaLevi says that Vayakel Pekudei, there is an expression that is used over and over and over again. We're going to look at it a little bit more closely together this morning. The expression of Vayakel Pekudei that's not in Truma Tetzava over and over again is Kasher Tziva Hashem. That they did as God had commanded. They did as God has commanded. Truma Tetzava are prospective. Here's what I want you to build. Here is the commandment. But Vayakel Pekudei is they got it done. And they got it done exactly as God had said. Because the message of Vayakel Pekudei, the Torah was ready to use up enormous real estate to repeat things that we already knew. Why? To remind us that while there is room for individuality and creativity in Torah Judaism, however, we have to remember it has to fit within the formula of the prescription, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that the Almighty Himself gave us. That we can't get too creative. We can't invent for ourselves, certainly not at the expense of doing what He's asked of us. And therefore, for the words, Kasher Tziva Hashem, just for the words as God commanded, it was worth repeating Vayakel Pekudei over and over and over again. Vayakel Moshe is called Das B'nei Yisrael Vayomar Lehem. Moshe gathers all the Jewish people. When is this, says Rashi? L'macharas Yom HaKippurim Kesheyored Min Ahar. This is when He descended from the mountain. It is the day after Yom Kippur. It is the fresh start, the new beginning. Moshe brings them and gathers them all together. Why did He need to do that? We have two mitzvos of Vayakel. two times that a mitzvah is delivered while we are assembled, when we are a community. And they are the Mishkan and they are Shabbos. We're not going to go into it today, but I leave you to think about and challenge you for your Shabbos table. What do the Mishkan and Shabbos have in common? And why specifically for both of those were we gathered and assembled together in a group? Many of the Mefarshim say, what is the contrast, the juxtaposition of the end of last week's parsha of Kisisa with the beginning of this week's parsha with Vayakel? And they say, the end of last week's parsha, Moshe has these rays of light that emanate from his head. Moshe has this glow. Moshe clearly is categorically different than all others. The people were afraid. They recoiled. And they said, he's so different. Vayakel Moshe is called Das Bnei Israel. So he gathered everybody. We're all equal. We're human beings. We are all interconnected. We're one tzibur. We're one community. We are one unit. That was the antidote. That was his response to their reaction to the Keren Or, to the rays of light that emanated from him. So Moshe gathers everybody and tells them, Shishas Yom Ta'asim Malacha, 6 days do work. And the seventh day you rest. We've spoken about this at length. Go back to previous Shiurim. If you go on either yutorah.org and put in my name, or rabbiefremgoldberg.org and go to the Parsha Perspectives, you can listen to all the previous years on any given Parsha, and you'll hear we discussed this section at length and analyzed what it is introducing, the deep, deep concepts of Shabbos, of Lo Sivar Reish B'chol Mashoseichem, the Karaites, those who took the Torah literally, didn't have a fire burning, even if it was lit from before Shabbos. They sat in the cold, and all the food they ate was cold. We talked about the history of Chalant, and how Chalant is a mitzvah to eat, not only because I happen to love Chalant, but Chalant is the affirmation, I believe, in the oral Torah, not just the written Torah, that you are allowed to have a fire if it's from before Shabbos. We spoke about the Shla Kadosh. Lo Sivaru Ish B'chomash Vasechem Yom HaShabbos teaches me, I can't have a fire raging inside me. No anger on Shabbos. A fire doesn't just mean literally a fire, it means the fire of rage, the fire of anger. Shabbos is a time of peace, serenity, tranquility. Even if there are things that are worthy to be angry about, even there are things that we are in the right to be angry about. But Shabbos is not a time for rage, anger, or outrage. Shabbos is Lo Sivaru Ish, you can't have a fire burning, there has to be peace. Others interpret this, the Ibn Chaim, we saw the vision of Lo Sivaru Ish, B'yom HaShabbos. You can't just have the fire burning on Shabbos. Shabbos is a time that we daven slowly, and we learn a little bit more, and we spend more time with our family, and we disconnect from our technology. You all know my love for Shabbos. Friday afternoons, we gather for Turn Friday into Erev Shabbos. But says the vision of the Ibn Chaim, you can't just have the fire burn inside you on Shabbos, and then the Vach, the weekday, you go back to being a cold, heartless Jew, a mindless Jew. You can't go back to your technology addiction and obsession. You can't go back to the rigmarole of life. You can't go back to the stresses and the distractions. But the fire can't just burn in your home beyond Shabbos on Shabbos. It can't be that's the only time your children see you. It's the only time you have a meal together. It's the only time that you actually set aside to learn, to grow. It can't just be on Shabbos. It has to be much more. But let's keep going. Moshe tells this assembly and he says, this is what God commanded you. And what is it? Kichu me'itchem truma l'Hashem. Giving a parsha shir, a drasha, dvar Torah, and vayakel pekudei are challenging. Everybody used their best stuff already on truma tetzaveh. We're seeing essentially the same thing, but there's always endless and limitless insights to share, and we'll try to do our best this morning. So kichum eitchem truma, take from yourselves a portion. Kol nediv libo, anyone with a generous heart should bring this gift. And they should give it from gold, silver, copper. We're going to list all the materials, the ingredients, tcheles, agaman, tol, ashani, sheshizim, and so on and so forth. And here we hit our first Eish Tamid, our first Rav Druk of the day. Mirtz Hashem B'li Ayin Rav Druk is coming to Boca this week, later this week. And I look forward to either recording or having him on the Parsha Shir. We've been learning his Sefer all year. It's beautiful, beautiful insights. And I want you to meet and see the extraordinary individual behind these beautiful Divrei Torah, Mirtz Hashem, B'li Ayin Hara. Says Rav Druk, Yesh L'daktek Bevir HaTeva Me'itchem. The Pasuk says, Hashem instructs Moshe, tell the people, Kichu Me'itchem Truma. Take for yourselves, Me'itchem, from yourselves, a gift from Hashem. Why doesn't the Pasuk simply say, Kichu, take, Kona Divlibo, anyone who's generous, a donation, an appeal. What do you mean from yourself? V'nemru b'zeh kama peirushim, and Rav Druk quotes three interpretations of the Kli Yakar, and then he throws in a malbim for good luck. Here we go. You ready? First, the three Kli Yakars of Lunshitz. Says the Kli Yakar, number one, kechum meitchem bolamait es hagazol. Meitchem means it has to be rightfully yours. It has to be authentically and genuinely yours. You can't give from that which is stolen. Next week, we're going to start Sefer Vayikra. And we're going to begin Vayikra by saying, Adam ki yakrev mikem, when a person offers, when a person sacrifices mikem from themselves. So we'll darshan it next week. But the Gemara in Sukkah Daf Lamed darshans it, lahotzi es hagazel. You're not allowed to bring a korban from stolen property. You can't cut corners, you can't cheat on your income taxes, you can't ruthlessly compete in business, you can't steal from others and then give tzedakah. You can't then give a korban. Lahotzi es hagazel. Adam ki akrav mikem. When you offer the korban, it has to come genuinely, authentically, honestly from you. It can't come from the stolen. Hu adin kan. The same is true here, says the Kli Yakar. HaTorah ba lomar kechu davka meitchem. The Torah is saying, take from you. Ach im ein ha-mamon shalachem in HaKadosh Baruch Hu unyan klal benisina kazu. Very important lesson. A parsha perspective for today. You know, what we give, what we offer, what we donate, you can't justify being ruthless in business. You can't justify cutting corners or being dishonest on income taxes and misreporting business expenses. You can't justify because I'm going to give tzedakah. Oh, he, she, they give a ton of tzedakah. It has to come me'itchem. It has to be rightfully. It has to be legally yours. Otherwise, Hashem is not interested. Hashem is not impressed. Hashem is able to get the money, the funding to support his institutions, his values, his mission from elsewhere. So kechu me'itchem. It has to come me'itchem. Pshat number one, says the Kli Yakar, is it has to be legally, rightfully, honestly from you. Number two, Od Perish HaKli Yakar, me'itchem. Shko echem yizdariz la'mitzvah me'atzmo. Ki yesh adam she'enu nosin klamat shirach enu nosin miskana bahem. Al keinu nosin l'hashvas es atzmo lahem. V'ze'enu me'itchem. Ki u atzmo enu siba l'anasina, el acherim siba lo. I was told I have to read slower in the shir so people can follow along and feel that they're listening and learning together. I'll try harder. So shot number two of the Kli Yakar. Kli Yakar says, you know what me'itchem means? Me'itchem means that you should not be motivated to give because you're keeping up with someone else who gives. It shouldn't be you see the names of others on the list. Your name is missing from the tribute list, the pillar list, the donor list, the global list. So you say, you know, my neighbors, my machatonim, my others are on there. How's it going to look if I'm not there? I guess we have to give because others gave and we need our names to appear. Because that's certainly better than not giving at all. Let me make very clear, even if it's not the highest or a high level of giving, that is certainly much better than not giving at all, but it's not a higher level. The higher level is not to give because others gave. It's not to give because you are peer pressure to give. It is giving me'itchem. Without anyone seeing, without anybody knowing, without anybody pressuring, and without keeping up with anybody, me'itchem. You're self-motivated. You're driven on your own. You want to make a difference. This morning, this happened before Rosh Hashanah, but for the second time now this year, there's a box in the door to my office. People leave all kinds of shilas, anonymous questions, and all kinds of other things they drop off. There is an envelope with many gift cards to a local kosher market for anyone who needs for Pesach. There's no note, there's no name, there's no letter, there's no desire for a tax deduction, there's no desire for me to mention their name in a parsha shir. It's simply a gift me'itchem. Not keeping up with others and not for a name to appear again. Those are better than not giving at all. And that's why there's many tshuvas by Achronim who talk about should you use your name when you give or give anonymously, and they conclude you should use your name because it will inspire and motivate others to give as well. And there's value in that. But says the Kli Yakar, the higher level of giving should be me'itchem. Not to keep up and not to appear on a list with others, but simply driven internally to give. Number three, Kli Yakar, me'itchem mamish. Don't just give superficially. Don't just give externally. Don't write a check, Venmo, Zelle, or drop off the cash. But give me'itchem. It should be from you. from you doesn't mean that you have to give until it hurts, but you can. You can decide, me'itchem is, it's a choice. I could have a bigger flat screen, or I could make a bigger difference. I could have more expensive wine, or I could be smoking more expensive meats, or I can give more to make a bigger difference so others have basic food to eat. Me'itchem. Don't just give superficially or externally. Give, not that it hurts, but give that you're making a decision. You're giving up something. It's selfless. You're giving a piece of yourself. Every time we give, we're giving a piece of ourselves, me'itchem, because it's blood, sweat, and tears. It's our effort and our toil. We are giving that which we worked so hard for. And therefore, number three, it's me'itchem. So three pshatim of the Kli Yakar, what does it mean, me'itchem? Number one, it has to be honest, me'itchem. It can't come from that which is stolen. Number two, me'itchem, shouldn't be motivated by keeping up with others, should be an internal drive. And number three, me'itchem, is you give a piece of yourself, not just externally money. But then Rav Druk throws in a fourth pshat. Because of Amalvim B'Shem Sefer HaZohar, Shemetchila Namar Stam V'Yichuli Truma. At first it says, take from me a gift, a donation. Shekolal Afas Ha'irav Rav. Omnam La'achar Cheta Egel Amar Kchum Me'itchem. Shekchum Me'itchem Es Yachiz L'Vnei Yisrael Belvad. So at first we took a donation from anyone. Anyone who wants to give. Even the rabble-rousers, even the Erev Rav, even those who joined who were not sincere or don't share the same history or destiny as the Jewish people. But now we got a little bit more particular. Kichu me'itchem, mesiaches l'bnei Yisrael b'vad. Shelo yikablu min ha'erev rav shum davar l'nidvas ha'mishkan. The Mishkan is a place of holiness, a sanctity. And therefore, we have to be careful from whom we take donations. And that's also very clear for Torah institutions. Schools, shuls, kolam, mikvos, erev kashas. Everyone has to be very careful. It's tempting to simply take from anyone, anywhere, anytime, because after all, it's feeding and it is propelling the cause. But me'itchem, we have to be careful. We have to be scrupulous and vigilant to take from honest and genuine sources, me'itchem, not from a type of an Erev Rav. Okay, then the Pasuk says, Pasuk Lamanei, Pasuk Chav Aleph, moving right along, turning the page 518 in the Art Scroll Stone Chumash, page 520 in the Art Scroll Stone Chumash, the end of Perek Lamed Hei, the end of Perek Lamed Hei. So Perek Lamed Hei, I'm sorry, I went too far. 5:18. I was right the first time. Vayavo kol ish asher nisa'o libo. Again, chapter 35, verse 21. Vayavo kol ish asher nisa'o libo. Every person whose heart inspired him came. V'chol asher nadva rucho oso heviu es shumas Hashem l'mlachas ol moed. Anyone whose spirit, whose heart motivated, brought the portion of Hashem for the work of the ol moed. U'lechol avodas so ulevigdei hakodesh, for all of its labor and for all of the sacred clothing, all of the sacred vestments. And here we go to Rav Druk number 2. Says the Ramban on this pasuk, vayavo kol ish asher nisa'o libo v'chol asher nadva rucho. All the people who were moved by their heart, who had a generous heart and a generous spirit, brought their gift. Says the Ramban, a very, very important insight. And I want you to listen carefully. I love this insight. We're going to elaborate a little bit here. Says the Ramban, Nachmanides, Rav Moshe ben Nachman, Vayavo kol ish asher nisa'o libo. If you have a mikros gedolos, follow along inside in the Ramban. Perek lamed hei pasuk chav aleph. Everybody who had a generous heart, ala chachamim ha'osim b'malacha yomar kein, ki lo matzino ala meznadvim nesiyos leiv, aval yazker b'hem nedivus, v'tam asher nisa'o libo, l'korva el ha'malacha. Says the Ramban, wondering a very compelling question. We are talking about a nation of slaves, a nation who spends 2 centuries in servitude, and now they've been liberated, they've been emancipated, they've been freed, and they're taken to our Sinai, and they're taken into the desert, and they're traveling through the desert. And here in the desert, God says to them, I have architectural plans, I have diagrams. I want you to build these utensils. I want you to weave complex, complex things. I want you to build and assemble complex, complex utensils and a structure. Wonders the Ramban, where in the world did they know how to do this? How'd they know? Where was their training? Where was their apprenticeship? How did they know? They didn't go to school. They didn't go to an academy. How in the world do they know? These are slaves. They have no training. They have no education. They knew naturally, intuitively, instinctively. Look at the Ramban. But Rav Druk unpacks the Ramban. Ramban calls of Shiyisrael b'Mitzrayim ha'yipruchim b'avodas chomer v'alveinim. In Egypt, true, in Egypt they worked. They were slaves. They were bricklayers. They were bricklayers. Now, I speak like bricklaying is not a skill. Far be it for me to say. I don't know that I would be able to effectively, in an organized straight row, lay bricks that would withstand the test of time. So I do not mean to minimize the skill of bricklaying. But they were bricklayers. They didn't know how to work with fine metals. They didn't know how to be craftsmen. Nor did they see anyone train under anyone. Had they know how to weave? Had they know how to melt? How did they know how to shape and mold? Had they know how to work with all of these materials? And even when you find somebody who excels at one, you don't find somebody who's an expert at all. And the people who can do the major don't know how to do the fine. The people who do the fine can't do the major. And yet here, the Torah doesn't delineate or discriminate. It seems to say they all did it all. How in the world did it happen? Listen to this insight. From the natural perspective, if you look logically, it's impossible to understand, to believe how the Jewish people succeeded in building the Mishkan. Because in order to excel at such a thing, you got to go to school, you need to go to a fellowship and a residency, you need training and hours of internship. It's a nation of slaves. You ready for the answer? Do you know what compensated for the lack of training? What compensated for the lack of schooling and education? Says Rav Druk, based on the Ramban, Yesod Ha'atzlacha, the core and the source of their success, Haisa Nesius Lev Shehaya Lahem. They willed it in their heart, their generous spirit, their drive, their ambition. What you make up for in training, and what you lack in talent, and what you lack in skill, you can make up for in will, in desire, and drive. What a life lesson. What a life lesson. We all know people like that. Their skills, their talents, their natural talents are not impressive or great, but they're so driven and they're so ambitious, and this is where their heart is placed. They're so passionate. Says Rav Druk, based on the Ramban, you're right. This was a nation of no training, a nation of no education, a nation of no know-how. They should never, ever have been able to succeed, and yet they had Nesius Lev. They had a drive and ambition. This is what they wanted, to serve Hashem and to answer and to build and to fulfill exactly what he said. Anyone who wanted to answer and heed the call, anyone who wanted to come to Moshe and say, I'm in, count on me. Ah, but you don't know what you're doing. It's true. They never did it before. When it comes to something noble, when it comes to something spiritual, nothing stands in the face of the will. We see this empirically. When you are driven to do something godly, sacred, when you're driven for a holy mission to make a holy difference, then nothing can stand in your way. You merit a siyata d'shmaya, divine intervention and divine inspiration. We see this. There are people who aren't the most brilliant, but they dedicate themselves to Torah learning in ways they excel and they emerge great. There are people who dedicate themselves in leadership. There are orators who are not born with natural ability to speak, but they're passionate, they're driven for a sacred cause and a noble mission, and they merit siyata d'shmaya, divine intervention and divine assistance and divine help and divine success. You know, I thought about this, not only in the area of ruchnius, there are people who we see this coming true for in the world of learning and in the world of chesed, in the world of leadership, but there was a documentary done on the first Air Force of Israel in 1948, surrounded by enemy nations who sought to destroy. And not only these first Israeli Air Force, which were airplanes made up of spare car parts. Absolute miracle. It's impossible not to see the miraculous nature of the founding of the modern state of Israel when you know the story of what it took. But how about the Holocaust survivors, skeletons, who walked out of concentration camps and held guns that weighed more than they did and fought in a war with no training as soldiers and founded the miraculous state of Israel? Was that not a noble cause and mission? Did Hashem not intervene and give them a hatzlacha because their passion, their drive overcompensated for what they lacked in knowledge, in know-how, in muscle? Chavetz Chaim medayek es hadvarim b'lashon ha'pasuk. The Chavetz Chaim sees this insight of the Ramban in the pasuk itself. Vayavo kol ish asher nesa'o libo. V'lo ne'amar vayavo kol ish chacham lev. It doesn't say everyone who had a wisdom of the heart came. It said anyone who had a generous spirit of the heart. Kol ish tam. Hainu kol shayim nidrashu rak nesiyos lev. All you needed was the passion. All you needed was the drive. All you needed was the dedication. V'lo shum t'nai machirim. You didn't take an IQ test or an entrance exam. You didn't have to have a skill set or the talent. You needed the drive. And if you had the drive, Moshe Rabbeinu enlisted you. And he enlisted you for this holy purpose, because Baruch Hu took care of the rest. And only then it says, Vayikra Moshe al Betzalav Eliyav al Kol Ish Chacham Lev. Asher Nasan Hashem Chachma Belibo, Kol Asher Nisa Olibo, Betchil Lo Katsav Shayu Chachmei Lev. It only adds that they were wise of the heart afterwards. Why? So Medayik the Chavetz Chaim understood from here, because what comes first is the passion and the drive. The knowledge and the know-how, they come after. Kodesh Baruch Hu will provide them if first we have the drive. The Gemara continues. The Gemara misaper she tziltzul shnei kelim mechin ze agav ze vekolam daka shon nechon shosai b'mikdash. There were these two utensils that would produce a sound. They were made out of bronze in the temple. Hayakolo arev, they produced a very sweet sound. V'nifkam, and they broke. So the sages of Jerusalem sent for the experts. The experts, your refrigerator, your oven breaks, you got to call the experts. What they charge per hour, the knowledge, the know-how, you're not an expert. Something breaks down, you need somebody who knows. Today you could Google, you could watch a YouTube video and try to fix it yourself, but you might make a bigger problem. So they brought the experts from Alexandria, from Egypt. They fixed it, but the sound was no longer sweet. They had a crusher that used to crush the ground, the spices. It broke, so they brought in the experts from Alexandria. They fixed it, but it didn't crush the spices the way it used to. So they took out the thing that fixed it, and it corrected it. So you see in this Gemara, what's the moral of the story? What is the Gemara telling us? The story says, Rav Druk, they brought in the experts, and the experts had all the know-how. The experts had the training, but they couldn't produce the sweet sound. They couldn't produce the pleasant fragrance, because there is the intangible. There's the intangible of the person, not only the skill set and the know-how, not only the training and the education, but there's the intangible of the passion and of the devotion. And that is what makes everything right. Ein hadavar omed b'fnei haratzon. Nothing stands in front of the will when your will is to fulfill the will of Hashem. You see this also with Avram Avinu, says Rav Druk. We find this in many places. Avram Avinu, when he was commanded in order to give himself a bris, he was 100. So what was he thinking? To do a milah on himself? Didn't he have to learn Hilchos Milah? Didn't he have to practice on others? He's going to try an experimental surgery on himself at 100 years old. Was he out of his mind? He understood, says Rav Druk, Hav tshuva pshuta, kevin shaylo ratzon az lekaimes ratzon Hashem. He had this insatiable thirst. He had this appetite to fulfill the will of Hashem. So when Hashem said, do a bris on yourself, he didn't hesitate. He didn't pause. He didn't go for training. He didn't go for education. But rather, he became the instant expert. You know, what do they say? Necessity is the mother of invention. Necessity is the mother of invention. If you are driven to fulfill the will of Hashem, and that becomes a necessity for you, then that necessity to fulfill the will of Hashem is the mother of invention, it's the mother of education, it's the mother of expertise. the mother of expertise. Rav Druk applies this in several other places. It's pages long. I want to get to other ideas. He says this in the area of the mitzvah of Shechita, of the Korban Pesach, to shech the Korban Pesach. They took selaveis avos selabayis. Everybody took a lamb or a sheep, or had to be less than a year old, all the criteria that had to be met. And they shechted, they slaughtered it. How'd they know the laws of Shechita? How'd they practice? How were they trained? How did they do it at that level, that magnitude, that volume? Again, the same notion, the same answer. Where there's a will, nothing stands in the face of that will. We see this also with the daughter of Paro, Bisya Bas Paro. Everyone knows the famous story. Vatered Bas Paro l'rchotz al yor, she went down in order to bathe at the Nile. V'naro se'hochos hasvas al yor, vatered hateva, she saw the basket floating, and she extended her hand. The Gemara Sota Daf Yud Beis tells us that when she extended her arm, it went much further than it should have. She stretched her arm, and like Plastic Man, it just kept stretching. What does that mean? It meant that even though she reached out far beyond where she should have ever anticipated she could stretch, miracles happen. When we do our part, when we are passionate and driven, when we are singularly focused, when we want to fulfill the will of Hashem, then good things happen as a result. Ayidei Ratzon Chazak Mekablim Chachma. Through great Ratzon we get Chachma. That's how he explains a Pasuk as well, based on a Gemara and Brachos. Again, it's a long piece, you can look at it inside. Got to leave you some homework to do in the Eish Tamid. But a beautiful insight of Rav Druk, based on this Ramban, the notion of sometimes analysis paralysis. We're big believers in education. Of course we believe in the importance of an education, a degree, and training in any area of life, to be a machanach, to be a rav, a doctor, a lawyer, an accountant. You need the education, you need the training. But we can compensate for a lack of talent, a lack of innate skill, a lack of being a natural, by being driven and ambition for the will of Hashem. When a person has that drive, the will of Hashem, so a generation of slaves, says the Ramban, a slave people who have no education, no training, Kadosh Baruch Hu says, here's what I want you to build me. Here's what I want you to weave for me. Here's what I want you to create and fashion for me. And they say, we're in. And once they say we're in and they're driven, Kadosh Baruch Hu, the Almighty, does the rest. Next insight on the same pasuk. Next insight in the same pasuk comes from bum 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 bum. V'chol chacham lev. Yeah, comes from the tzaddik Rav Eliezer of Vizhnitz. Rav Eliezer of Vizhnitz says the following: Kol ish asher nisa'o libo, same pasuk, perek lamedei pasuk avalef. Kol ish asher nisa'o libo, everyone who had a generous heart, whose heart was moved, v'chol asher nadvarucho, oso heviu as trumas Hashem. So, kol ma shalibo shel adam choshek u'mizav ba'olam hazeh. So, Rav Eliezer of Vizhnitz, the tzaddik, understood this a different way, and he said, whatever your heart desires, whatever you're driven towards in this world, alav lahavi ketruma l'Hashem, redirect it and rechannel it as a gift to Hashem. In other words, kol ish asher nisa'o libo, whatever your heart desires, kol asher nadvarucho, oh, so that thing that you are driven towards, the thing you're drawn towards, the thing that you crave or have an appetite for, heviu es trumas Hashem, redirect it and make sure you're doing it lishma. Make sure you're doing it to advance Hashem's mission, Hashem's will. V'chein kosav Rambam in Hilchos Yisurim Mizbeach. The Rambam writes in Hilchos Yisurim Mizbeach, Perek Zayin Alacha Yir Aleph, Kol davar shu l'shem ha'kel tov, she'yemen ha'na v'atov, imbana beis tefila yena mibesh d'shivaso. Whatever you're going to enjoy, whatever you love, whatever you benefit from or you're drawn to in this world, dedicate it to Hashem. So if you're contributing towards the building of a shul, make it even more beautiful than your own home. If you're feeding someone who's hungry, make sure they have better food than what you eat. If you're clothing the naked, give them better clothing than what you have. Hikdish davar yakdish min ayafa shebenachasav. If you're makdish something, if you sanctify something, sanctify it from the best. Homiletically, he interprets this pasuk to mean whatever we care passionately about. You love food, you love wine, you love things, you love experiences, you love money. Whatever you love, take that love and direct it towards a holy destination and towards a holy goal. Perek lamedei pasuk lamedei. Now we turn the page. Page 520. Selecting these craftsmen. Milei osam chochmas lev la'asos ko malaches charash. Says the pasuk, He filled them with a wise heart to do every craft of the carver, weaver of designs, and embroiderer with the turquoise, purple, and scarlet wool and linen, and the weaver, the artisans of every craft and makers of designs. So the pasuk, Mile Osam Chochma Slave, he filled them with the wisdom of the heart. This fits exactly with the beautiful insight of the Ramban, that they were driven, they showed the will, and the Kadosh Baruch Hu met them halfway and filled them with the know-how. However, Rabbi Yisrael, the Beis Yisrael of Majitz, has another pshat. Again, Chassidus Shavort. He says, Mile Osam Chochma Slave, he filled them with the wisdom of the heart, Lasos Kol Melaches Charash, in order to do all of the crafts of the Charash. What is Melaches Charash? What is Melaches Charash V'choshev V'rokeim? So Melaches Charash means the carver, the carver. However, the word Charash has another connotation. A Cheresh is somebody who is deaf. What does the pasuk says? Tacharishon means to be silent. So says Rabbi Yisrael of Majitz, Lahachrish bo'es ha-tzorach hi'atzma chochma gedola. To know when to be silent takes a chochma. Mile osam chochma slev. One has to be filled with great wisdom. Lasos ko melechas charash. To be familiar with and to be an expert in the malacha, in the skill of charash. You have to know when to be silent. K'mo she'amru chazah mesechazov siyag l'chochma shtika. Our great rabbi say in Avos that a siyag l'chochma, if you want to protect the wisdom you have, learn how to be silent. There's a reason God gave us two ears and one mouth. We should be taking in twice as much as we put out. Mile osam chochma slev. He filled us with the wisdom of the heart, lasos melechas charash, in order to acquire the malacha of charash, in order to know when to speak and when to be silent. I've told you before, the Rav Volbe says, you know, we teach children how to speak. They start saying words. Every time I speak to my grandson, I say, Zayda, 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 Zayda. We try to teach them to speak and they say a word, yay, we celebrate. Do we ever teach them to be silent? Once we teach them to start speaking, says Rav Volbe, we forget to teach them when to stop speaking, how to be silent, and the virtue and the value of silence. That too is a malacha. That too takes a chachma slave. It's a skill set, and it takes a wisdom of the heart to know when to be quiet as well. Perek Lamed Vav, Pasuk Aleph. Moving right along, same page. The engineer, the architect of the Mishkan, should carry out with Aliyav every wise-hearted man with whom Hashem had endowed wisdom and insight to know and to do all the work for the labor of the sanctuary, everything Hashem had commanded. Ashenasan Hashem chochma utvuna bahema ladas. Hashem had put inside them all of the chochma, all of the wisdom to know what to do. We are at Rav Druk number 3. We'll see how many we get through today. Rav Druk number 3 says Rashi, "Kol mishen es asig b'malach." Sorry, not Rashi. Says the Shmos Rabba, the Medrash, "Kol mishen es asig b'malachas haMishkan, nasan b'akadosh baruch hu chachma ubina v'das." Whoever worked on the building of the Mishkan, Hashem implanted, ingrained within them chachma, bina, and das. They were all chabadnikers. They were all lubavitchers. Chachma, bina, udas. We've, in the past, in previous Parsha Shirim, we've unpacked what is the difference between the three. Shenemar v'yasu chochma le, v'lo b'vnei adam, ela afilu b'behema v'chaya. It wasn't just that God gave that to human beings. God also gave the chachma, bina, and das to the behema and chaya, to the animals. Shenemar chochma utvuna b'hema, b'hema k'siv, shenitna chochma b'adam uva b'hema. So the Medrash tells us, even though the literal understanding of the pasuk is that he placed the chochma and the bina, the wisdom, bahema, in them, don't read it, don't punctuate it as bahema in them, read it and punctuate it as behema. God gave not only man the wisdom, knowledge, and know-how, but God gave that to animals as well. So you can imagine, wonders Rav Druk, yeshlit moa, based on the Medrash. I understand man is the designer, the architect, the builder. Man will bring the mindfulness, the intent of the heart. The animal is contributing their skin. The animal is contributing their body. What do I need the animal, the lowly base animal, to have chachma, bina, and das? Do they put on a gartel too, the chabadnik animal? What does the animal need to have chachma, bina, and das? Nira levar behektim. Kemoshim is a paras ha-gemara. So the Gemara Baba Metzia Daf Pehe tells us what Reb Chiya would do. Reb Chiya was so devoted to make sure that we would never stop or forget learning Torah. So the great Reb Chiya, who of course would have preferred to immerse himself in the Beis Medrash, but you know what he did in order to ensure that Jewish education would continue? Listen to what he did. He would go out and he would plant the flax in the fields. And after they would sprout, they would blossom, they would grow, he would collect them. And Reb Chiya would weave them. And he would make nets. And then he would catch things. And he would shecht them. And he would feed it to orphans. And he would take the skins. And he would make klaf. And on that klaf, he would write the Torah. Chamishei Torah. U'la'achar mikein ha'ya'ola li'ir she'im b'malamdei tinokos. And then he would make his way to a city that didn't have a school. Think about the early days of the Torah Masorah movement. Dr. Joe Kamenetsky, Zatzal, my grandfather, Sam Aboff, Zichron Levracha, who worked with him and partnered with him in the early days of Torah Masorah, that image of, not today where you could take a plane easily, but in the days of taking trains and taking traveling in ways that were deeply, profoundly uncomfortable and time-consuming, and they made their way all over the country to convince communities to found schools because of the importance of Jewish education. Before Torah Masorah, there was Rabbi Chiya, and Rabbi Chiya would make his way around Israel, and he would take all the effort, the flax and the hides, and where he had written the Chamishei Chumshei Torah, and he would go and he would find five students, and he would teach them Chumash Lecho Echad Lecho Yelad. He'd find six more kids and give them each a Seder of Mishnah. And he would say to them, says the Gemara Baba Metzia, Ad she'ani achzor, until I come back, to lamdu ze'ezeh, ma she'limadati eschem. You, who I taught the Chumash, teach the other Mishnah. The one I taught the Mishnah, teach the Chumash. Bepu'ulos elu sher b'chiyah, hu ha'ya'osa shelo tishtakach Torah Mi'Yisrael. And through those great efforts, he himself ensured that Torah, that Jewish education, would not be lost. And you read this Gemara Baba Metzia, wonders Rav Druk, and you say to yourself, Rabbi Chiya was the Rosh Yeshiva. Rabbi Chiya was the Gadol Hador. There weren't others who could plant the flax and harvest it, who weave the nets. There weren't others who could skin the hides. Why was he doing it himself? Says Rav Druk, what you see from this Gemara is that Rabbi Chiya understood that every component and every contribution that goes in to something holy itself needs to be holy. And to ensure that it was done, l'shem shamayim, to ensure that it was done with the right intent and the right mindfulness and that it was endowed with the right thought, he took it upon himself. He didn't rely or delegate to others, but he did it himself. Al derech ze yesh lomar. Based on this, says Rav Druk, we can apply this. Shekasher oskim bebnias haMishkan, when it came to the building of the Mishkan and to creating a home for Ashras HaShchina, a place to divinely feel the intense connection with Hashem, muchrach liyoshlo rak ikar abniyati l'shem shamayim. It couldn't just be that the building itself, it couldn't just be the Gedolei Hador, the Rosh Yeshiva, would show up at the end. It couldn't even just be that the human beings would have the right mindset. Anything connected in any which way, Hashem himself taught us this when he endowed even the animals with the right spirit. Every ingredient, every material, every act had to be endowed with the right attitude and with the right spirit. So the Mishkan would in fact meet that need, that it would be a holy place. Everyone involved, animal and human alike, had to be holy. Intent matters. Intent matters. We believe mystically, I believe, it's brought down in so many of the holy Svarim, that you know, when you cook Shabbos food, the attitude, what you're listening to, what you're talking about, what you're thinking about, it goes into the ingredients. It matters. Are you gossiping Lashon Hara? Are you speaking judgmentally of others? Are you in a bad mood and angry and frabisana? Or are you filled with emunah and faith and hope? Are you listening to a parsha shir and a munah shir? Are you singing songs? Are you saying the kavod Shabbos? That goes into the soup and the gefilte fish and the kugel and the challah. It is one of the ingredients that goes in. So if it goes into the Shabbos food, certainly it went into the building of the Mishkan. It goes into all the holy activities and the work that we do. That it's absorbed, the energy that we create is absorbed, so much so that not only Bahema that God endowed Chabad, Chochma, Bina, and Das in Bezalel and Aliyah and those who were working, but Bahema is Bahema. Even in the animals that would make up the ingredients of the Mishkan, there too Hashem endowed. Continuing right along. Perek Lamed Ches, Pasuk Ches. Perek Lamed Ches, Pasuk Ches. Turn the page. 520, moving right along. 526 in the Art Scroll Stone Chumash. Moving right along. We're repeating all of the utensils, the kelim of the Mishkan, and all of the, in Parshas Pekudei, all of the Big Day Kahuna, and so on. So we're up to the laver. We're up to the kiyor. Perek Lamed Ches, Pasuk Ches. Vayas Sekiyor Nechoshes, Vayizkanu Nechoshes. He made the laver of copper and its base of copper from the mirrors at the entrance of the tent of the meeting. We've analyzed the kiyor many times in the past. Rashi quotes from the Medrash Chazal that Moshe Rabbeinu says to Hashem, "What? No way! I am not accepting the mirrors. Instruments of vanity? These women used to beautify themselves? You want that to put in the Mishkan? There's no place for it in the Mishkan." Hashem said, "There is a place. These are the most holy contributions. These are the holiest donations yet. Absolutely, there's a place. You must take it." The back and forth. What was the debate? What was the conversation? We've spoken about this so many times in the past. These were the mirrors the women beautified themselves with when the men gave up hope, when the men saw no future, when the men grew despondent and withdrew from their wives because they refused to bring children into such a harsh and heinous world. The women said, "What are you talking about? We live in a world of faith in Hashem. It's going to get better. It's going to be better." We just learned today's Daf Yomi. Women are chayiv in arba kosos. Women drink of the four cups. It's rabbinic. It's time bound. But afhena yuba oso anes, which Tosfos understands to mean, Rashi understands to mean, they were the catalyst of the miracle. Not just that they benefited from the miracle, they were the catalyst and the cause of the miracle. They maintained their faith. That was captured symbolically in these mirrors that they had used to beautify themselves. They were not just instruments of vanity, they were instruments of continuity, instruments of faith, instruments of holiness. We've shared all about that and elaborated on it in the past. But a new insight from Rav Druk this year. There's something unusual about this. Rashi quotes, who are the ones who gave it? We don't know when it comes to any of the other kelim, materials, ingredients of the Mishkan or of the wardrobe. We don't know who are the ones who gave it. Why do we specify? Why do we call out specifically when it comes here? The kach mavur shachilish b'truma zu shafilu shayachav v'atlam kol kach, because these mirrors, they meant a lot to the women. They loved them. They had nostalgia. They had meaning. And they used them to beautify themselves. And now they took something they cared a lot about, something they felt very connected to, and they were willing even to part with it. They deserve the credit of our mentioning their name. Because they cared so much about it, and because we would have understood if they didn't want to part with it, all the more impressive it is, and therefore they deserve our mentioning their name. But listen to the Targum Unklus. Unklus translates and therefore interprets differently. Unklus writes, Da'asiyan l'tzala b'tera mishkan zimna. This gift was given by the women when they came to pray at the entrance of the Ol Moed. The Nir Bir Dvarav says Rav Druk something very significant here. The merit they had in donating such a critical utensil and instrument in the Mishkan was in the merit of their davening. Through their davening, they found the strength. Sometimes we think that when we daven, we wait for Hashem to provide the answer. But sometimes the very exercise of davening gives us the strength, gives us the faith, gives us the hope. So before you daven, you say, "I don't know how I'm going to get through this. I don't know how I'm going to be able to give that away or donate or make men's meat. I don't know how I'll be able to sacrifice or be selfless." But then the exercise and the experience of davening itself transform us and leave us different, so that the davening is answered just through the davening. I'm not waiting for Hashem to provide the answer externally, but Hashem has provided the answer that the act of davening itself has had such an impact. They merited to find the courage and the strength and the generosity to give the mirrors they loved so much, because through the davening, they recalibrated their priorities. Through the davening, they remembered their values and what mattered. The experience of davening itself gave them the strength. So don't only daven because you're waiting for Hashem to answer. daven, because davening is in itself one of the ways that we become strengthened. Daven is one of the things that gives us the courage and the hope. Another insight on the same pasuk, are also connected to the kior, to the laver. Vayasas ha-kior, says the Maggid of Dov Ber of Meshritz, Shetzorach kol odom livchon es atzme kiluhu mabid bamar'eh. Why was this mirror? When the Kohen came in, they would wash their hands and feet in a basin who was made out of the mirrors of the women. And it was next to the altar. So says the Heilige Maggid of Dov Ber of Meshritz, that what? A person has to look in the mirror and evaluate themselves. Shekein kalo la'odom lahavchon b'chesronos chaveiro. It is so easy to see and identify what is lacking in the other. To be judgmental and to be critical and to see what's missing in the other, that's easy. That comes naturally to us all. But to know about ourselves, to have the self-awareness of what we need to work on and what we need to fix, that's much harder. Therefore, says the Maggid of Meshritz, Yaso es chavero kemara la'atzmo. One should use their friend as the mirror for themselves. When we look in our friend, we hold our friend up to the mirror. So in other words, kol haposel b'muma posel. What you don't like in your friend is really something you don't like in yourself. What you're hypercritical of in others is really what you're being critical of yourself. That's the idea of looking in the mirror, is to be able to use other people around us as a mirror for ourselves. You see something and it's bothering you in someone else, stop and say, am I really guiltless? Am I really innocent? Do I not also act that way sometimes? So you take that first reaction and feeling of being frustrated, bothered, or judgmental of what someone else is doing, and you transform that to say, what can I learn from that which I see in someone else about myself? Why is that bothering me in the other? Well, apostle b'muma apostle, because what I'm seeing in them is really a reflection of myself. Rabbi Soloveitchik in the Rav Chumash expands this, and he says that's why the kior was before the mizbeach. The Kohen had to first look in the mirror before they can go to the altar and achieve atonement. You can't achieve atonement if you don't look in the mirror, if you don't take personal responsibility, if you don't take extreme ownership, if we don't own up to where we went wrong, if you don't look in the mirror, then you cannot improve, you won't get better. That is Vayakha, Parshas Pekudei, page 530. We've left ourselves 8 minutes for Parshas Pekudei. It's a good thing you already saw it in Tetzaveh. Eila Pekudei HaMishkan, we spoke about Eila, that the Eila Pekudei HaMishkan makes up for the Eila Elohecha Yisrael. Eila Pekudei HaMishkan. Rav Volba has a great insight. The first Rashi in Pekudei explains why there's yet another parsha dealing with the Mishkan and the Kelim. We already spoke about all of this in Tetzaveh. Why are we doing this all over again? So we know that there was suspicion raised about Moshe. Moshe takes this Pekudei, he takes this accounting, and he's missing. It's an inexact number. And Moshe panics. He knows he didn't take. He knows he didn't cut corners. He knows he didn't take for himself. But how is he going to account for what's missing? The people are going to falsely accuse him. And then he remembers the vavim, the hooks. We've spoken about that at length before. Why did he forget the hooks? The thing we take for granted, that which holds us together. He neglect, he took for granted. And when he remembered to take an accounting, he was vindicated. And in fact, all was accounted for. But the Medrash Shmos Rabbah explains the pasuk in Mishlei, Perachav Ches. The pasuk there says, an honest man will increase blessings. And says the Medrash, that's a reference to Moshe. Moshe was able to take an accounting for every last penny of the Mishkan. Due to his unwavering integrity, the money he was entrusted with was sufficient funds from the Mishkan. Everything was accounted for. It was the perfect amount. Everything was good. Points out Rav Volba. Sefer Shmos began and ends the exact same way, with the notion of integrity with money. So I understand that in Pekudei, Eila Pekudei HaMishkan, Moshe has great integrity when it comes to money here at the end. Where is the integrity with money at the beginning? So maybe this has been lost on many, including me. But the Torah tells us that the bassinet that Yocheved, Moshe's mother, made for Moshe to survive, to float in the Nile, was made of gomeh, of cane. And Yocheved was trying to protect her son. She could have used cedar wood. She could have used something stronger, something more expensive, something that might have lasted longer. But she used something more inexpensive. She used something softer. She used cane. The Gemara Sota Daf Yud Beis tells us from this incident that you see that tzaddikim and tzidkonios are chasa al mamonam. They care about money. They don't waste. They don't squander. They don't throw it away. She could have used something more, but the situation didn't demand it. Yocheved knew that the lesser expense material would suffice. It was good enough. So she could have had the fancier, she could have had the Rolls Royce of bassinets, but she instead went for the Honda Accord. I drive a Honda Accord. She went for the Honda Accord because she knew the righteous are chasa amamonim. They care about their money. Why? Are they cheap? The righteous are focused on money? Why do they care about money? How is that so? It seems so incongruous. I would think the more righteous you are, the less money focused, the less you care, the less you're trying to save, says Ravolba the following. They're careful with money because they earn every penny honestly. They didn't cut corners, they didn't steal, they didn't cheat, they didn't misreport on their taxes. Every dollar they have is a gift from Hashem, earned honestly, earned with sweat and tears, and given by God, entrusted to them to use correctly. And if HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes you the steward and entrusts you on that money, it was given for a purpose. And if you waste or you squander it elsewhere, then you have violated the trust of Hashem. So says Rav Volba, that Sefer Shmos begins and ends with the same theme. It begins with Yocheved being careful not to squander money because it's a gift from Hashem. We have to be responsible stewards of the money that we have and to use it the right way. And it ends with Moshe taking an accounting that all that he had done was with honesty and integrity, that he never cut a corner. And we, our generation, has to return to a sense of integrity and honesty with money, not chalila to cut corners or to not report honestly on our taxes or to be ruthless in business and earn it in an immoral way, but to recognize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the one who gives us the money. What we have is what we need and what we deserve, and what we have is a gift from above, and we are entrusted with it to do the right things, not to squander and waste it, and not to achieve it or earn it in the wrong way, and to recognize the great responsibility that we have in that he gave it to us, the great responsibility we have with it. Okay, lastly, we'll end off. Vayasa b'nei Yisrael k'chol asher tziva Hashem. Perek Lamed Tes, Pasuk Lamed Beis. Lamed Tes, Lamed Beis. Vatecha kol avodas ha-mishkan o amoyed, vayasa b'nei Yisrael k'chol asher tziva Hashem, as Moshe kein asu. So wonders Rav Druk. The Pasuk says, all the work of the tabernacle of the tent of meeting was completed. The Jewish people had done everything Hashem commanded, so they did. And Rav Druk wonders, isn't that the wrong order? Isn't that the wrong order? The pasuk should have been given to us exactly the opposite. It's not his question. He quotes Rav Shlomo Kluger. Hagon Rav Shlomo Kluger omid al haseder shel hapasuk v'sho al she'ila atzuma ki hinei l'chora yatzarech l'chtov behepech. Pasuk should have said the opposite. Vayasu b'nei Yisrael k'chol asher tziva Hashem as Moshe. The people had done all that God commanded. Vatechal kol avodas mishkan ol moed, and now it was complete. First say, they did everything they were asked, and it was complete. What do you mean? It was complete. They did everything that was asked. And he answers so brilliantly. Or Rav Druk is answering Rav Shlomo Kluger's question so brilliantly. And he says this order is actually more correct. Why? Because we shouldn't think that our effort is what yields the result. We have to recognize that the result comes from the Ribono Shel Olam. Yes, we take our initiative, and yes, we make our effort, and yes, we can be proud of the contribution that we made. Be proud. We worked hard, and we used our ingenuity, and we gave up, and we toiled, and be proud of our contribution. But never, ever take all the credit. Kochi v'otzem yadi. Never think you or you alone are responsible. So it makes more sense, Rav Druk, to say the Mishkan was complete because Hashem wanted it complete. Hashem enabled it to be complete. It was complete. Oh, and everyone did all that they were asked. Meaning, it was complete because Hashem wanted it to be complete. But also, they did what they were responsible for. They took their initiative. They did their part. They made their effort. It seems out of order, but in fact, it's exactly in the correct order, because ultimately, while we take our initiative, its success is up to Hashem. Thank you for joining and listening. A reminder, watching on YouTube, hit the subscribe button. When you do, you'll be notified in real time every time we go live, and we can learn together. Join us tomorrow morning, right back here on YouTube. 10 minutes of Minim Mesilas Yesharim at 8:15, Living with Emunah at 8:45. Tomorrow night, 9 p.m., we go behind the bima with Jeff Swartz, the former CEO of Timberland, the major clothing company Timberland, CEO, Torah observant, amazing inspiration, how he observed Torah while he led an enormous multi-billion-dollar company, tomorrow evening at 9 p.m. Until next time, stay happy, stay healthy, and stay holy.